is Apollo Control at 44 hours, 58 minutes. Moving the GET clock ahead at 65 hours will affect the time that has previously been given for the lunar sphere of influence crossing. Newsmen who are interested in this time should add 2 hours and 40 minutes to the time previously given, which would make the time for lunar sphere crossing now 73 hours, 23 minutes, 24 seconds, ground elapsed time. The distances and the velocities that were previously predicted will remain the same. Those are 190,725 nautical miles from Earth, 33,639 nautical miles from the Moon, and an Earth referenced velocity of 2,340 feet per second. Apollo 17 is now 148,668 nautical miles from Earth.
Resting or did you quit?
No, I'm resting right now. Didn't seem like my arms have the stamina they did yesterday to hold the artificial G. What did you get to?
We copied about a maximum, about 118
on heart rate.
About 118 max, Jack.
Roger, I understand.
Don't let me harass you. I just was kidding you on that. Whatever you think is fair.
Well, you're not harassing me. Let my arms rest, and I'll try again.
Spacecraft velocity now 3,441 feet per second.
Couple interesting data points for you, Jack. We saw while we were doing that, we watched the PPCO2 go up, and we saw the tanks destratify again, same way.
Very good. Next mission, they'll have to flight plan it.
That's affirmative.
You saw the PCO2 go up?
Oh, that's affirmative. Let me get the numbers here if you want. It took a jump from 1.3 to 2.4 on that.
Okay, that was with two of us going, and part of the time three of us going.
Roger, I know.
No, we still got one going.
Well, it's not unexpected. I just thought you'd be interested.
Sounds sort of normal. Hey, Bob, with this change in the hour, what time's the penumbra start?
Say again the question, Jack. What time does what start?
With the change in hour, what time does the penumbra, what time do we enter the lunar penumbra?
Right now, we don't. Tommy doesn't think we're going to go into the penumbra, and we're verifying that.
Okay.
Say, Ron, could we ask a question about the heat flow experiment setup?
Sure, go ahead.
You mentioned that the lineal chips were all in the XX plane, and we're just wondering, do you mean along the XX axis of the spacecraft?
Yeah, along the XX axis of the spacecraft.
Is the long XX axis of the lineal cell along the XX axis, Ron?
Yeah, that's affirmative. It's right side up if you're looking at the connect panel, you know?
Yeah, that's, they'd like it so that, the axis of that lineal cell would be parallel to the bottom of the panel 100, as an example. It's probably, right now it's perpendicular to the bottom of panel 100, isn't it?
Yeah, the lineal thing is right now perpendicular to the bottom of panel 100.
This is Apollo Control at 45 hours, 5 minutes. Ron Evans is making preparations to again perform the heat flow and convection demonstration. Hey, Houston, America.
Go ahead, Ron.
Okay, I think I see what you're saying. I'm sorry, I read the thing with lineal cell in a plus X direction, but what they mean is a lineal cell in
lineal word,
lineal,
I guess.
Lineal cell up.
Roger.
Okay, I'll turn around the other way for this PTC part of it then.
Wait a minute on that, Ron. We're having a debate whether we want to maybe continue the next part in the same attitude or just rotate it.
Okay, seems to me like you'd like to maybe leave it in the same attitude.
Ron, the only rational reason to change it right now is we're hearing words that if you had rotated to the other way that you get better pictures out of the DAC due to the lighting reflection on it. The PI would like to change it back to the other way.
Okay.
Seventeen, just for information, we will not be going into the penumbra.
Okay, sorry to hear that.
Ron, we see you 52, and you can go ahead and torque. Ron, Houston, we're watching your 52, and you can go ahead and torque.
This is Apollo Control at 45 hours, 17 minutes. Flight Dynamics Officer Bill Boone has just informed Flight Director Chuck Lewis that 9 hours of tracking since the mid-course correction number 2 burn confirms that the burn was indeed a good one. On the present trajectory of the spacecraft, the height of closest approach to the moon is 52 miles.
Ron, a couple of reminders. LOI. Houston.
Roger, go ahead.
Roger, Ron, just a reminder on the LOI canister change, have you gotten into that?
No, not yet. We'll probably get started on this.
Okay, on the...
on the heat flow first.
Roger, understand. Oh, and we'd like to know when you start on that heat flow, Ron, because we need to get the DSC to high bit rate.
Okay, I'm having a little trouble getting them mounted in stable position this way.
Understand.
Okay, Houston, 17, about ready to start it here in about 45 seconds, sir. Let me know when you get the tape recorder going.
Roger, Ron. Okay, we got the tape recorder in high bit rate.
Okay.
Hey, stand by one, Ron. We got a little change here we'd like to make on the plan on page 2-6.
Okay, stand by for 0321. Mark it. It's reset. Start the stopwatch.
Roger. And Ron, on the checklist on page 2-6, after the 16-minute end of test and proceed to next test, we'd like to turn the DAC off at that position.
Okay, will do.
And then you turn it back on at the where it says reset stopwatch and start the time zero there point. Prior to that, turn it on. I'll remind you of it.
Okay.
You don't want to watch me feel that pan again, huh?
Say again, Ron.
You don't want to watch me feel the pan again.
Yeah, Rod. Yeah, I'll be up before then. We'll watch it fill the pan. We just, while you're taking time wiping it and all that, that's when we don't want to use up the film there.
Okay, I'm with you.
Actually, I've already cleaned out the little area there.
Roger. I've got 1 minute on my timer right now. About 1:27, actually.
Oh, thank you.
This is Apollo Control at 45 hours, 38 minutes. Distance now 149,941 nautical miles from the Earth. Velocity 3,405 feet per second.
Okay, Houston, the DAC is off now.
Roger, DAC off. Say, Ron.
Go ahead, Houston.
Yeah, Ron, if it's not too much bother, it's one of those nice things to have. The PI would like you to take a picture with the 35 millimeter indoor of the orientation of the heat flow as it's mounted. If you can get that, if it's not too much problem.
Oh, okay, no problem. Good idea.
And that should be magazine SS, which is the same one you'll use for the with the alphabet tomorrow.
Affirmative, okay. Yeah, there must have been a few more bubbles down in there again. That was two turns now. And I've got it about half full all the way across.
Roger.
But maybe there's just about 8 or 10 bubbles in it. Essentially, Okay, looks like about six of the bubbles developed into three for some reason.
Roger.
Doing real well there, and then on the seventh turn, a bunch of bubbles came in again.
Roger. Ron, I might have given you a bad call before. We don't want the DAC on until just before that 2-minute mark here. We're just prior to going experiment heat select flow pattern low. At that point is where we want the DAC on.
Okay, you want the DAC on when it starts heating up.
That's for sure.
Right? Okay. May have lost track of turns here, but they've either got 7.5 or 6.5 turns in here, and it still hasn't overflown that first lower baffle. They've got a tremendous convex surface on the fluid, but it still hasn't broken the meniscus of the first baffle.
Roger, we copy that.
Another turn, because it was my understanding we wanted to try to get in the second baffle anyhow. So I'm going to take another turn of Crytox and put some more in there.
That's correct, Ron. Ron, if that doesn't do it, and they're saying you might want to take a pestle or something and stir it a bit to try and break it up from the lower baffle into the upper baffle.
Okay. I'm afraid I may have it all over the place if I do that, but I'll try it.
Roger, very slowly. Charon, just a question while you're watching it here. Do you have any bubbles in the lineal cell?
Now this one is going to be interesting. There are about nine to a dozen small bubbles right next to the eject port, and then about the same number right in the center of the convex portion of it.
Roger, Ron. We didn't copy your answer to our question about any bubbles in the lineal.
Whatsoever.
Roger, thank you.
And there might have been a very slight movement. Matter of fact, I can see just a very slight movement even now. The particles in there, they're still lined up in the direction, essentially, though. Although it looks like some of them may have deviated from the front of the lineal unit back toward the center. Or toward the back of the lineal unit, as you call it. Yeah, I missed the 2 minute start time there, but I can keep track of it here. So we'll start the deck, and then I'll turn this below at 2:45.
Okay, we got a hack on it, Ron. If you've started it, we start our clock.
Okay. You know, just for a future reference here, if we like to do things in zero G and without jarring or jiggling, we want to make sure that the switch actuates with a minimum of pressure.
Roger, good point.
Okay, that's just now starting to develop, look like circular cells, great big ones. And then some of the bigger ones are subdividing now.
Okay, we
bigger
got that.
Bigger ones are even, okay. Some of them are even getting bigger. One of them is about 3/4 of an inch in diameter, and it hasn't divided yet at all.
Those are real good comments, Ron. I was just
in
talking with the experimenters, and if you've got nothing else to do, giving us some sizes of those cells would certainly be very beneficial.
Okay. Okay, frame 27 was taken at an elapsed time of about 4 minutes.
Okay, we got that.
Stu, it's Jack. I was taking the pictures. I took four pictures about 20 seconds apart. The sequence just after he started it. And that ended with, or started with frame 26.
Okay, frame 26 for four frames.
Okay, that one cell I spoke of that was about 3/4 of an inch in diameter. Now is about an inch long and maybe 3/4 of an inch wide. Each, all of the cells seem to be bigger in general. They're bigger this time. There's two small ones at about 1/8 of an inch in along one side. The other one is 1/2 inch, 1/2 inch, 1/4 of an inch, 1/2 inch, and then a circular. When you get around the annulus of the cup, then you start getting circular sides instead of straight sides. All of the flow comes from a little center spot and flows outward from the center toward the outside of the cells.
Okay.
In this case, all of the bubbles have disappeared except two.
Ron, is the smallest cell you see about 1/8 of an inch across?
The smallest cell I see is a four-sided one. It looks like a diamond. And it's 1/8 of an inch on one side, 1/8 of an inch on the other side, and maybe 3/16 on the other two sides.
Okay. That sounds, that's a good description, Ron. I know on mine, some of the smaller ones didn't show up in the film, and we were not sure what size they are, so you might, before you quit, bracket the smallest of the biggest cells by your estimate of the size.
This is Apollo Control at 46 hours, 10 minutes. Apollo 17 is 150,976 nautical miles from Earth, traveling at a speed of 3,375 feet per second.
90 degrees from this one. And this millennial cell was on the right. And the millennial cell was aligned with the XX axis.
Okay, Ron, we got, we had a drop in our signal strength there, and we did get your last comment about the orientation. We missed some comment about the frame numbers, I think, came from Jack.
Okay, something is a little different on this one here. Right at the top of the flow circle, it looks just like a finger. It's a curved surface that goes out and almost touches the circumference of the dish, and it looks just like if you're holding your finger up and looking at it. It's that type of a shape to it. Comes back down, and it's about a half an inch wide. The flow, again, emanates from a source that is almost on the fingertip, you might say.
Okay, we copy.
Okay, somehow that fingertip finally touched the complete circumference, and the tip of the finger disappeared.
Okay.
Okay, my small 1/8 inch or 1/8 of an inch sided diamond joined with another one now. And one side of the diamond is gone. I still have three sides of the diamond. And the fourth side of the diamond, the upper right-hand corner of the diamond, you might say, has disappeared and goes on with another little square, a rectangle. One end of the rectangle is about 3/16 of an inch long. The other two sides are about 3/8 of an inch long.
Ron, what's the location of that diamond and rectangle in the circular dish? And is it near the edge or is it toward the center?
They're almost. No, it's almost in the center. Towards the center, almost in the center. On the left edge, as you look at the piece of equipment, as you're looking at it, there are absolutely no patterns at all. There is a flow. You can see a stream of flow. Whoops, I get up there and start looking at it, and I blew on it when I was talking. You can see a stream of flow from the circumference in toward the outer group of cells. The outer group of cells is at least half an inch from the circumference, so at that point.
Okay, Ron, we copying all that?
Yeah, I think there's a general migration of the cells kind of toward the bottom of the circle, if you want to look at it that way. And they seem to be stretching kind of in that direction, too.
Okay, you're saying that's toward minus X?
The first thing. No, toward the plus Y, as you're looking at it.
Okay, they're migrating toward plus Y.
I'm trying to make all directions with respect to the right side up of the equipment, you know.
Okay, we've got you.
And the first finger I talked about was at 12 o'clock. It has joined the edge now and almost disappeared. Their second finger was still essentially the way it was, is getting slightly closer to the edge. There's maybe, less than a 32nd of an inch between the tip of the finger and the edge, and it goes out at 2 o'clock. Okay, from 3 o'clock on around to about 7 o'clock, the cells, it's in a shadow, and I can't see for sure if they're touching the edge or not, but it looks like They're probably essentially touching the shit at the edge.
Okay.
And then from 7 o'clock on around to 12 o'clock again, none of the cells are touching the edge at all. And they're on average of 3/8 of an inch from the outside circumference.
Okay, we're getting all that, Ron. And Ron, we'd like to verify that the fluid is up to the second baffle.
That's verified. It's up to the second baffle.
Okay.
All I had to do was start it in one position, and as soon as I started it in one position, it whipped all the way around it. From the point I started it, it went all the way around in both directions.
Okay, that sounds beautiful. That ought to be a good data point for something.
Yeah, right. I think in the low flow here, evidently things are even a little bit slower than they were in the high rate, in the high heat rate. But my little diamond now is almost joined with the rectangle, and I think given half a chance, it's tending to go into another five-sided figure.
Okay, we copy.
As we're cooling down, the flow patterns tend to join together so far. The ones in the outer periphery dissolve into straight lines. Straight lines emanating in a radial direction from the center of the circle. and Houston, if you're listening, or DSE, if you're listening. Had a little bit of film. Oop, there's the end of film right now. May as well stop it. But yeah, I went to high for a little ways.
Okay, Ron, you came back in. I didn't get all of that. I understand you ran out of film, and say the other.
Well, I still had a little bit of film when the cool down, the 2 minute cool down period was left, so I went back to high on the flow pattern just to see what would happen. And it looked like they were starting up with, again, larger sized cells developing into smaller ones. And initially, all of the cells were about a half an inch in diameter, and they were closer to the periphery of the dish than they were in a low position.
Okay, we copy that, Ron. After you went to high, after the 19 minutes, how long was it before you started seeing a change?
Yeah, it was within a minute there. See, it cooled down fairly rapidly at the end of the 2 minutes. All of the cells had essentially dissolved. You had some radial lines on the outer perimeter. The cells that were on the outer side degraded into strictly radial lines back to the second row of cells. The row of cells that were on the inside kind of joined together and all ended up into one or two large cells about an inch, or about three-quarters of an inch across.
Okay. Sounds like a real good
data. Got the high going. Have it in high, and the pattern that's developing is almost identical to the what was happening in the low, except it seems to be happening at a faster rate.
Okay, we copy that.
Triangle, or my little diamond developed down there, and it disappeared. Well, this time it kind of joined with a different little cell. But it was the same cell next to it. I still have the big one that's about an inch long at 11 o'clock as I had before. I still have a finger that's developing about 12 o'clock and another one about 2 o'clock. They seem to be migrating again toward the bottom of the dish.
Ron. It sounds like you've really wired that experiment in great shape, and all the and everybody's real happy with the data. I guess now you might as well tear it down and press ahead. Okay, Ron, we're back with you now, and everybody's real happy about the data and the experiment. Looks like you did a super job, and you might as well tear it down and press ahead.
Okay, I still got it in the high, and I'm kind of sucking the fluid back down the intake. And as I get the fluid thinned out, lo and behold, there's a whole bunch of bubbles underneath there. And each bubble is a source for one of those little cells. It's the internal source.
Okay, Ron, we got that. You may have made a breakthrough for science.
Go ahead. Ron, just a reminder that we're scratching that page 3-45, that from 46 to 47, that's scratched out, and then from then on all the times we just subtract an hour from it, if you haven't done that already.
Let's see. Yeah, we've already done that, Bob. Thank you.
Right. Just a reminder on that, and Ecom's over here trying to figure out if you changed the canister or not. Just a reminder on that one.
Okay, we'll get that as soon as I get this out of the way, okay?
Sure. While you're back there, panel 100 net, you might park the optics we see there or not in zero.
And along that same line, Ron, we did notice several times while people were watching through the optics that they went to zero. And it's no problem if the rates are low, but just a reminder that we don't want to bump it into the stops with any kind of a rate. We just picked up some data points down here. People, you were all looking around, I guess, and you might, it's easy to miss that trunnion going to zero, I guess.
Houston, 17.
Go ahead, Jack. Or Gene?
I'm ready to update your weather in the western Pacific if you're interested.
Roger, go ahead.
Still can't quite figure out what that circulation around New Zealand means. It looks like it's merging with some more weather to the southeast. I suspect it's stormy there, but I still, it's not a terribly well-developed storm, although it seems to be broadening in its extent. Australia is completely free of any significant weather and almost completely free of clouds. There appears to be a front, although right now it does not look too intense, approaching from the southwest, and it looks like it's about 5 degrees of longitude south of the southwestern tip of Australia. The typhoon Cirrus, I guess it is, appears to be in just about the same position it was yesterday. And that is north of Borneo and between Vietnam and the Philippines.
Roger, we see that on a prog here, Jack.
Okay.
Jack, we've been out of comm here. we've missed any of your last report here. Ron, did you ever get your P-23 data from today?
It's negative. Never did.
Okay, I just got some updating information for you if you want to listen to it. I don't think you need to copy it down.
Hey, good. Go ahead.
Okay, Ron, the effective horizon was 25 plus or minus 6 nautical miles, which is real fine. The substellar pointing error was 1 arc minute, plus or minus 1 arc minute, which is less than the 1 sigma error. The marking data was extremely consistent, and all techniques and procedures were excellent. And the horizon update from the current onboard value of 28 is not required, so they were extremely good P-23s. Outstanding.
Hey, it's good to hear. Great, thank you.
And I do have one input from your other half. There's a concern that if you spill grape juice on your flight suit, it's hard to get out. So be sure, and when you're drinking grape juice, you want to make sure you learn how to drink it right.
Okay. We'll try that for sure.
This is Apollo Control at 46 hours, 46 minutes. The display, which shows distance and velocity, is referenced to the moon at this time, so these numbers I'm about to give you will be moon-referenced and not Earth-referenced. Apollo 17 is 80,322 nautical miles from the moon. Velocity 3,349 feet per second. Crew is in a meal period at this time, and we don't expect much conversation for some time. Earlier today, while the lunar module was being checked out and during a test of simultaneous dual communications capability from Challenger in America, a portion of the conversation was lost due to a communication line configuration in the public affairs distribution system. We have now obtained tape of this lost conversation from the air ground recorders here in the control center, and we'll play that for you now.
Okay.
This is Houston. Was that we'd like to confirm the tunnel index angle. That's a positive, a plus 1.2, is that right?
Stand by.
Well, I don't believe it yet. I want to check it myself.
Well, Gordo, that's what I read, but I figure it's just privilege. I was just checking for any scratches on the drogue. Doesn't look like there are any out there.
Ron, can you estimate in inches how far down the bungee piston is?
Yeah, it's down about a half an inch.
Measure.
And when I take the, I move the handle back a ways, and I can take the hook I took the hook and I pulled it back off the docking ring and then it caught again. So now it won't go back over the docking ring. See, I just lifted the hook off of the docking ring with my finger.
Roger. I'd like to caution you again, sticking your finger around or under that hook. There may still be some spring energy stored up there that could release.
Oh, you betcha. Yeah, I know that. No, I was just touching the top of the hook and I pulled it back off the docking ring.
Okay, I think we got the picture. We're having a long conversation here about that latch, Ron. Why don't you all just press on down the checklist and leave it as it is while we think about it?
Okay, that's what we're doing there, Gordo. Okay, Gordo, you want the... O2 heaters 1 and 2 off and 3 on them. That's what you've got.
Yeah, that's fine.
Gordo, I'm on up through the tunnel from America to Challenger.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. One piece of tape coming up shortly.
I tell you, Gordo, it's remarkably clean up here. It doesn't look like the snowstorm that I remember coming into last time.
That's Gino. We tried to leave it all tidied up.
I guess it's up here. Hey, you did a good job, friend.
Roger.
it's upside down in there. The commander's window has a slight amount of condensation in the along the lower left edge. That's the left-hand edge, really. It seems to be disappearing as the sun warms the window.
Roger, Jack. Sounds like the cabin repress is working okay.
Holy moly. Man, I bet. Did the heartbeat go up on that?
Sorry about that.
Roger, Jack.
Okay, I'm looking out the AOT and I see a VHF antenna and part of a rendezvous radar antenna in position one. Right into the radar antenna, and as I said yesterday, it looks beautiful.
Roger.
Position three, I see the other side of America, and very, very clean AOT, very clean. Got a good view of the side of the service module. And there you can see these little blisters in the side of the covering there quite distinctly. I think people have talked about those before.
Roger.
Yeah, I'll take that back. That's the side of, that's the side of the command module. I'm looking at that has the little blisters on it. Got to get oriented up here. good cue of the hat to position 6. Watch your eyes now, Gene. Look up rather than in. The sun's in the lower portion of the field.
Roger, Gene.
Step 1 on
1-4. Okay, Gordy, the
LMP OPS
is 6100 PSI, 6100.
Roger.
And the CDR's OPS is 5900, that's 5900.
Okay.
Okay, jet bag coming up. Yeah, go ahead, sir. You're in the tunnel, what do you need? Okay. Checking circuit breakers now, Gordy.
Roger.
Both circuit breaker panels were as advertised, Gordy.
Okay.
This is Apollo Control at 47 hours, 18 minutes. That completes the tape from this afternoon. At this time, Apollo 17 is 79,293 nautical miles from the moon, with the lunar referenced velocity of 3,343 feet per second. Flight director has just gotten another update on the S-4B impact prediction based on tracking to date. The newest prediction is that the impact will occur at an elapsed time of 86 hours, 59 minutes, 55 seconds. At 3 degrees 58 minutes south latitude, 12 degrees 35 minutes west longitude. While that tape was playing, there were several conversations with the crew, including one between Brigadier General Tom Stafford and Gene Cernan. Stafford was Cernan's spacecraft commander in both Gemini and Apollo. We'll play those conversations for you now and then come back up live.
Houston 17.
Go ahead. 17 Houston, go ahead.
I need to make a correction. Roger, I need to make a correction. It looks as if that storm area that was in New Zealand yesterday has moved up across the two islands and is now sitting northwest. It's getting a little hard to identify the smaller islands in the Pacific, but pretty sure I've got it in the right place now looking at the map. And it is northwest of New Zealand. It looks like New Zealand's probably having reasonably good weather today, although I suspect it rained last night.
Roger, Jack. That's interesting because on my prog, it doesn't show a thing down that area. It just might not be up to date here yet.
Well, there may be nothing down there except some cloud patterns, and but that's all I can see, of course. The front that's south of Australia now, presumed front, just looking at a fairly well-developed, although narrow, cloud line, is about 10 degrees south of Perth right now, south west of Perth, and runs on a north-west-south-east line over to a point about 10 or 15 degrees southwest of Tasmania. And then it intersects a curve front that runs from there up to Tasmania and then back around down south of New Zealand about 10 degrees.
Roger that.
Say, Bob, this is Jane. I got some new sensors on. You might want to take a look at them.
Roger. Good show, Jane. We were just wondering about that, and I'll nudge you guys on my left here and make sure you're looking at them. We're not getting any data yet,
Jane. We're starting to get... from just off Luzon on a northeast trend. Thick high clouds overlying some thick lower clouds behind the front.
Roger. You might have some be of interest on board there, the Fidos. Jack, we've been having comm dropouts here on this Omni as you swing around on us.
Okay, where did I leave you, Bob?
Well, I'm not sure because we picked up a number of different bits and then we dropped it all.
Did you get the overcast over Korea and Manchuria bit?
Negative, I didn't get that.
Okay, that generally, South China looks clear. I haven't had a real good look at it yet. It's out on the limb. It's clearly, however, overcast over Korea and Manchuria. It does not appear to be frontal weather there, though. The dominant front in the northwestern Pacific stretches on a northwest line from just off Luzon on up as far as I can see to the terminator. And it seems to be an extremely strong front with what I would guess is heavy air mass weather all along it and up to the east-north-east of Japan. There's an excellent example of a shadow line from some fairly thick high clouds on solid overcast of lower clouds. I don't see any major cyclone development along it or wave development. It just looks like a very strong air mass front.
Roger, Jack. We've got it on our prog here. We don't show the one up on the northeast part of Japan, but we do show a front prog for tomorrow morning going off of Taiwan and right from Taiwan eastward past the Ryukyu Islands and just on into the northern Pacific there. Looks like a pretty heavy cloud mass over.
Roger, that's the one I'm looking at. It's extremely heavy. And right now, it starts about at Luzon. It looks like Taiwan is almost on the backside of it.
Yeah, that's where our prog. It shows it right on Luzon, and then Taiwan's clear.
Very good.
We'll keep up as you get there, Jack. So you may be interested. We've got 9 hours of good tracking on the after the mid-course, and we show a perilune of about 52 miles, which confirms a good mid-course.
Sounds outstanding.
That's great.
You can cross off the canister, by the way. It's changed.
Okay, he comes. Happy about that now, finally. And, Jane, the CD, your data looks good.
Okay. I never had a chance to tell you, Bob, but you, as you see, I presume the LMB no longer has sensors on.
Roger, we confirm that.
By the way, those were the, I guess you know, the sensors that we put on at the Cape, and they still seem to be in good shape when I took them off. I figured I'd let things rest a while, and then I'll put them on again tomorrow.
Roger. Looks like you've got an E period scheduled here for an hour, and then into the pre-sleep checklist.
We'll be the old pre-sleep checklist.
Apollo 17, Houston.
Go ahead, TP.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that Talkative Commander on board?
How are you doing down there?
Well, feeling lots better. Like I told you, Gino, I think that you were the jinx on Jimny 9 for all the delays. Over.
No way. You got a longer history than I do.
Everything's looking great.
Yeah, it's looking good on board. I think we're pretty well squared away. We got our stowage in shape, and we're in the house cleaning routine, and that's about 50% of the battle.
Right.
The weather down there didn't look too good today. How's it been?
Well, it started out, it was below minimums this morning, and finally this afternoon it cleared up, but it was strictly zilch this morning and starting last night, and there's another front due in here later tonight.
Yeah, we've been watching that one.
Well, Jack, you're turning a very trained weather observer besides being a geologist.
Oh, I'm enjoying it immensely, Tom, as you may have gathered.
Right.
It's a very interesting place to watch, I'll tell you.
Absolutely superb.
How are things on a home front, TP?
Gino, things couldn't be better.
Well, you might pass on all the good words from us.
Oh, will do. I plan to drop by and bum a cup of coffee tomorrow.
I'd love to invite you up here for supper.
I wish I could join you. I could make another couple remarks, but they'd be X-rated, so I shouldn't.
Okay, I'll accept that. You notice I haven't yet.
I'm very well pleased, Gino. Your language is superb.
Seven Jane. Houston, just a couple words. I'd like you to know we were real satisfied with all the LEM data that we saw during the LEM activation work today, and looking at it, the data looked real good.
Great, Bob. You had me worried there for a while with that comm. You have a good idea what caused that?
Yeah, we're sure about 99.9%. It was just ground link-up.
Yeah, that's certainly the way it acted on board.
I guess there won't be any need to go back and change the checklist on that, but there's a lot to be said for maybe going to a real good, stable condition and getting a good, firm checkout before you go into that down voice backup mode and things like that. And I think that's what we would do in the future.
This is Apollo Control. We're back live now with AirGround.
17.
Go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, I'm just a little curious about the difficulty on holding the Omnis. Is that about the same as past missions, or are we losing them a little bit more than usual?
We're going to have Ed here give us a description for a minute, so let me stand by.
Okay.
Jack, according to our stalwart INCO over there, due to this new 210 down at Tin Bin Billa, we're holding actually longer than in the past history.
Okay, I just guess I've never been on this end before.
Roger. Do you hear it on board when we break lock there?
As a matter of fact, with a scratch enabled, we lose all the background noise. And we know when we're picking you up because we start to get background noise again.
Roger. In other words, you are able to stop talking or something when you know we're breaking lock then?
Well, if we happen to be talking when we break lock, no, unless we're watching the meter, we won't. We lose you when you get about... 50 by, say, 60% signal strength, and apparently we're not talking to you when we have less than that.
Roger. Yeah, INCO gave me a briefing tonight and showed me what chart to watch so I can look at numbers and when to talk. I've been talking myself too much lately.
Yeah, they have a beautiful chart there for that purpose.
I never really wanted to be an INCO, but I guess I was forced to tonight.
There are lots of comments for that one, Bob, but I better not say anything.
Roger.
Ed would never speak to me again.
Well, that's right. We can't x-rate the transcript, so we'll just have to take it easy.
Bob, I got another question about the Challenger.
Go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir. The battery voltage on low taps, strangely enough, was just like the simulator, but I had expected that the simulator might have been wrong and we would have seen higher voltage there. Is that about what you guys expected?
Roger, they said they expected that because of the extra time on the pad that they're running. That 2 hour and 40 minute delay is coming into play again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Good. I forgot all about that. Something made that flip my mind.
Well, things have been going so well that I can't blame you for getting that.
Tommy Holloway's crazy flight plan updates that we've just forgotten that we were ever late.
Roger. Say, by the way, we like the music in the background. Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, we didn't get it out at all until today. I don't know whether we forgot about it or too many other learning things going on. It's quite pleasant.
Roger, I don't think you forgot about it. I think you're just glued to those windows.
Well, I still am, as a matter of fact. The old Earth's coming by. And I mentioned a couple fronts that joined together about 20 degrees south of the south coast of Australia. And And it looks like that's a fairly healthy storm center developing down in there. Conceivably may migrate up across Tasmania and maybe up the Sydney-Brisbane coastal area in the next few days.
Roger, where is the exact center of that, Jack? It took me a second to get my prog out here.
Well, just a second. Let me give you a better run of map.
Roger. While you're looking at your map, I just might mention to Gene, just talk to your better half over there, and everybody's fine and happy.
Grant, always like to hear news like that, Bob.
Roger.
Bob, did you get that 15 to 20 degrees south-southwest of Adelaide.
Roger. Houston, are you into your pre... pre-sleep checklist yet? Houston, are you into your pre-sleep checklist now?
We're just about ready to get started, Bob. We're running a little bit behind, but we'll catch up here.
Okay, no sweat.
Trying to get some more of this good food down.
Roger. Keep saying those words. The people on my left appreciate that.
But it does take a while.
I'm sure of that.
You know what we really need is Rita to fix it for us.
That's firm. I'll go along with that.
Bob. Going to cycle H2 fans 1 and 2.
Okay, we're watching.
Fans are off.
Roger.
Bob, we're still on November. November, frame 140, and I'm going to take two more pictures before I go to sleep.
Roger, Jack. We copy that. November, November, frame 140. And you ought to be on 142 when you go to sleep, I guess, huh?
That's firm.